Great, thanks, Mike. Okay, I have one announcement here. That is that those of you on the ARSC Journal editorial board, you have a lunch meeting tomorrow. No, you have a lunch meeting Saturday at noon or whenever our lunch break is at some bistro to be determined. You can see your local editor whenever you get a chance, and he'll tell you where. Now, the next person we have up, I'm really pleased to bring here to ARSC. This is actually not her first time here. As you'll hear in this little bio she wrote, artist Wodehouse is both a pianist and a music historian. She's active for many years as a pianist in the San Francisco Bay Area, and she made her New York debut in 1984. She's recorded for both Vergo and Etc. A paper she presented on Gershwin's performance style at the 82 Arts Convention in Nashville launched her ensuing work with Gershwin's piano music. Her transcriptions of Gershwin's Columbia 78 disc recordings were published by Warner Brothers in 1987, which led to an NEH grant in 1989 and 90. This in turn led to her realizations on two CDs issued by Nonesuch in 1993 and 95 of Gershwin's piano rolls, as well as a subsequent CD released in 97, also on Nonesuch, of Jelly Roll Morton's piano rolls. She's currently producing a series of historical reissues for the Pearl label, begun in 1995, called Keyboard Wizards of the Gershwin Era, which our own Seth Winter talked to us about a year or two ago, something like that. Prior to her work with Gershwin and his contemporaries, Wodehouse had studied the recordings and reminiscences of performers of Debussy's music who had coached with the composer. Her 1977 dissertation from Stanford is entitled Evidence of 19th Century Performance Practice Found in 24 Versions of Chopin's Nocturne Opus 15 No. 2, recorded by pianists born before 1900. Sounds like a dissertation title. She was one of the earliest academically trained scholars to use historic recordings as a basis for a study of performance practice. In addition to a DMA in piano performance practice from Stanford, she holds a Master of Music in Piano Performance from Yale and a Bachelor of Music from Manhattan School of Music in Piano Performance. Information about her work can be found at her website, which is www.keyboardwizards.com. The title of her talk today is Magnificent Frauds or Ghostly Performance Recreations, Piano Rolls, an Interim Report.
I hate mics and I'd rather speak out. Is this okay? Is this a good mic? Okay. I have some scores that are sort of a little goody. I only made 25 copies, so sort of spread them around. It's for readers. This will come at the end of the program, sort of as your little dessert. I want to talk about my little corner of the world, which is a very, 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 very small corner of the world in knowing about piano rolls. Everybody considers me to be the world expert now with all the hype of the Gershwin CDs and the Morton CDs, but in fact, I know very little about this subject because it's a vast one, and it's just an absolutely fascinating one for scholars to get into, and I'm sure this will happen as time goes on. The question that seems to arise in everybody's mind today, and I don't know whether it did when the rolls were made originally, was, is this really the artist playing? Or is it a fake? And this is something that has been dogging me since the beginning of these piano roll projects. Actually, to me, this is not a really significant issue, because the fact is, first of all, piano rolls are not live performances. They never were, and they never will be. As CD recordings we have today are not live performances. They are idealized versions. Producers, artists collaborate together and create this artifact which is the best that their musical thinking can bring to bear with the techniques they have to hand. That's all piano rolls are. But they are a human product. They're not made by machines. They're made in a collaborative manner between technicians, artists, and working within a commercial industry with its own limitations and its own parameters. So forget about, is this a fraud? Is that really Gershwin playing? Please. Anyway. Actually, I wanted to sort of try to do a brief history of the way piano rolls were made, just to give you an overview, I think a lot of people don't know about this. Player pianos sort of came in around 1900. When piano rolls were created, originally, player pianos, pianolas, whatever, don't want to get into that. If you want to talk to me about that later. They weren't created by human performers. All you had to do was cut little holes into a piece of paper. So it's like, you know, early computer technology. You know, piano rolls are just holes in paper. They went across a tracker bar, which had a vacuum inside. The vacuum was broken when the holes came across the tracker bar, and it tripped the note to play. Now, the thing is, of course, these are only note-on, note-off information. You could just sit there with a pen knife yourself and put holes in, just like what we do in these new MIDI editing programs. That's how people compose music. And, you know, throw up some notes, and you can do that with a player piano roll. That's exactly how they did it. Now, they took it directly from the sheet music. They just said score, C is here, and D flat there, etc. But then, of course, they found out that they could add more holes in the roll to make it more interesting sounding. And voila, piano roll arranging started up. And this is kind of the thing that just never could go away, because as soon as you know you can do it, you'll do it. But what happened around 1905, 1910, in that vicinity with different manufacturers, they decided that they wanted to try to get human performers to lay down their own interpretations or their own arrangements. Undoubtedly a marketing device just to sell more piano rolls, so that they could have a piano roll played by Rachmaninoff or whoever. But in fact, it was Rachmaninoff and his editor. It was George Gershwin and his editor, and so forth and so on. But there was a kind of a machine invented that basically, it was a recording piano where the pianist sat down to a piano that had, each one of the keys had a little rod attached to the bottom of the key that would inscribe, when the pianist depressed a note, would inscribe on a rolling sheet of paper the note as it was on and then lifted when the note came off. So you could have a rough draft from which you could cut a raw piano roll. And you can see what you could do with that. You could square it up, you could make the attacks more even, you could add notes, you can get rid of the wrong notes, you could do all sorts of things with it. So even if a particular performance began with that raw data, it was always neatened up, if for no other reason than to get rid of the wrong notes. Now, some companies really went much more significantly into this area of squaring up the attack points on notes and the release points. Because the fact is, if you've ever tried to MIDI edit to create a performance from raw note-on data that sounds lifelike, the timing, the note timing, and the note velocity, that is how loud or soft a note is, has to be so indescribably perfect to suggest human performance that it's mind-boggling. The detail of human performance in terms of note timing, note velocity, is staggering. Now, we were going to look at some of that, and unfortunately, the screen doesn't work for my stuff, but never forget, human performance is unbelievably complex, and we will never, I don't think, and I tried with the Morton recording to recreate somebody's hand-play performance. I don't have any hope in the future that it will ever be perfect for many, many reasons. Not just that to capturing the data and creating the performance, but also the vagaries of each piano, every reproducing system. We can't beat that problem. Every piano's different, and I think that's actually a blessing. Anyway, coming back to these original piano rolls where either they were cut in from sheet music, or the artist sat down and played, and then the editor fooled around with the raw data and maybe added notes, maybe didn't. Of course, the next step was to try to get these rolls to express. In other words, to have some expression, because when you hear a roll that has no expression, it sounds like a machine's playing it. And what they did in the early piano player pianos, or the piano players, which is a pianola, which you will see in my little film, they created little levers and knobs that you could either theme or make the left hand softer or louder, or the right hand above and beyond a split point. Also, it's really interesting, when you foot pump on those player pianos, if you become skillful at it, you can actually add sharp little accents, you can modify the tempo, so you can get a very coarse but rather convincing rendition of something that has a human element of expression in it. And that's what I did for many of the Gershwin piano rolls that were on the two Gershwin CDs. Now, I wanted to play one of the piano rolls, the earlier piano rolls that George Gershwin did that had me adding expression using a pianola. And this piece actually began in his hand playing, and I don't think it has added notes in it particularly to make it fuller or more interesting. Just to give you an idea what a hand-played piano roll sounds like when it's been expressed in this rather crude manner using a pianola.
Thank you. was one of the greatest. Some would argue the greatest American composer of this century, George Gershwin. And though he died at the all too young age of 38 in 1937, he lives on, of course, through his music. Recordings and performances by other artists have helped him to keep the Gershwin theme alive. But now, technology is allowing us to travel back in time and actually hear George Gershwin play his marvelous music himself. The old technology of piano rolls combined with the new technology of computers have come together in a marriage made in music, and the results are astounding.
A piano roll represented a performance of an artist, and it was one way in the early 20s.
That's me pianolizing. You see, that's my pianola.
Playing of an artist or somebody's arrangement of composition, but it was a mechanical device.
All right, so you saw the pianola.
As such, it had limitations. It was not as nuanced or as refined.
She's right.
You cut your hair.
Gershwin roll where many more notes than a human being could play. But I wanted to play the sheet music that it started with. Just, you know, what would happen is that the pop artist would get the sheet music, and of course, the artist was highly experienced Broadway. I mean, Gershwin was Broadway, rehearsal pianist, himself a composer. Look, all those piano roll artists were that way. They were not just people like classical people who play from the score, and then they trot in there and they play from the score. These people could play all kinds of things, but they started with the score. In other words, that's what they knew of the music to begin with.
I mean, look, it has bears no resemblance to actual of One Christmas Plane, but who cares? But you know, the thing is that there, you can see, if you look at this carefully, you can see where probably some ideas probably came from Gershwin. He may have even laid it down with recording piano, just so they had sort of a reference, and or maybe they could have done the following thing, which is there's a picture of the of Aeolian Studio where you see an artist, and I can't remember who it is, sitting at one piano. They had two pianos in the studio, and on the other side you see a pianola push-up. So maybe what happened was one part was recorded, the artist played it, recorded one part, and then overdubbed. Listen, I do not know how they were done. Where are the scholars? Where are you? Don't blame me. I do not know everything. You have no idea what I'm talking about. Or maybe you do.
Yes.
Okay. Now, coming back to this whole issue of human adding expression. Also, by the way, did you notice this this one had expression in it? Wasn't it good? Wasn't it slick? And there wasn't any jerkiness, right? Because this was a later piano roll where they really knew how to make rolls that when you're foot pumping, it wasn't going to go across the tracker bar. And you could add expression and it was going to be smoothly flowing. With all those notes, I don't know how, you know, there were technical reasons, but they did. One of the joys, of course, of having your player piano is actually interacting with it interpretively. It's a lot of fun. But, of course, the player piano roll manufacturers realized they could sell more things if they created more technology. And so that caused the advent of the reproducing rolls, which is the rolls that had automatic expression encoded on them. And you had to get a special reproducing piano, which cost bundles of money. They all did, the Welties, the Ampicos, the Duoarts. They were just incredibly expensive because they were incredibly complicated. And the expression, or a form of expression, was encoded into the rolls. And what they did was they pirated four of the notes on either end of the keyboard. And those holes on the tracker bar no longer triggered notes, but they triggered the dynamics in a binary coding system for DuoArt, which was you had multiples of 1, 2, 4, 8. In other words, you could add 1 plus 2, and you get level 3. You get 3 plus 4, you get level 7, so forth and so on. So there were basically 16 levels of dynamics, but in fact, there were many, many levels between them. There was the possibility of theming, and also the phenomenon of where you have, if you have three notes running across the tracker bar being asked to play level 6, if you have four notes, the actual note velocity is going to be lower because the way the vacuum is evacuated. It's going to be a different velocity, so it depends on how many notes are playing simultaneously, what your velocity is. Listen, there was a lot of gradation, but it was never, never, may I repeat, never like human performance. Human performance, the other thing that was true of DuoArt, which the system that I know pretty well, is that there was a split point, I think it was right here, and anything below this was on one system, and then anything above this was on another system. But basically, that's being too simple. But the bottom line was this. You could have a theming level and an accompaniment level going simultaneously above and below that split point, as I stress, simultaneously. So if you have three notes playing up here, see, I was going to show you this on the computer, but it's not possible. If you have three notes playing up here and two notes playing down here, these three notes will have the same velocity, and these two could have a different velocity down here. But you can't, in say the chord, this chord, if the notes are being struck together or more or less together, you can't have the velocity variation that human performance invariably has. And now for pop piano rolls, which is what I know about, I don't know about classical, but all the pop piano rolls I've looked at have simultaneous note onsets, which is when the note comes on, bang-o. So, you could possibly have the note variation in a chord.
when you look at human performer playing a chord like that. So the other thing is, but it may have been a blessing for them, because when you start getting into the vagaries of all these different note velocities and different note onsets, it's like a quagmire. So they were working within a very limited system, and they learned to manipulate it very well. They actually, in certain pop piano roles, were able to introduce rhythmic variation and a kind of subtlety that's very, very engaging. It's kind of a portrait of the artist, not the artist, but a portrait. And I wanted to play one of these later pop roles that is a really, well, it's not really pop. It's this Vix Beidebeck's In a Mist, played by Constance Mehring. It's a 1932 piano role. Just to give you an idea of how expressive some of these roles could be. By the way, also, there was a conversion. Vacuum is evacuated. It's going to be a different velocity, so it depends on how many notes are playing simultaneously, what your velocity is. Listen, there was a lot of gradation, but it was never, never, Mary Pete, never liked human performance. Human performance, the other thing that was true of duo art, which the system that I know pretty well, is that there was a split point, I think it was right here, and anything below this was on one system, and then anything above this was on another system. But basically, that's being too simple. But the bottom line was this. You could have a theming level and an accompaniment level going simultaneously. Above and below that split point, as I stressed, simultaneously. So if you have three notes playing up here, see, I was going to show you this in the computer, but it's not possible. If you have three notes playing up here and two notes playing down here, these three notes will have the same velocity, and these two could have a different velocity down here. But you can't, in, say, the chord, if the notes are being struck together or more or less together, you can't have the velocity variation that human performance invariably has. And now for pop piano rolls, which is what I know about, I don't know about classical, but all the pop piano rolls I've looked at have simultaneous note onset, which is when the note comes on, bang-o. So you couldn't possibly have the note variation in a chord on the top that you have when you look at human performer playing a chord like that. So the other thing is, but it may have been a blessing for them, because when you start getting into the vagaries of all these different note velocities and different note onsets, it's like a quagmire. So they were working within a very limited system, and they learned to manipulate it very well. They actually, in certain pop piano roles, were able to introduce rhythmic variation and a kind of subtlety that's very, very engaging. It's kind of a portrait of the artist, not the artist, but a portrait. And I wanted to play one of these later pop roles that is a really, well, it's not really pop. It's this Vix Beidebeck's In a Mist, played by Constance Mehring. It's a 1932 piano role. Just to give you an idea of how expressive some of these roles could be. By the way, also, there was a conversion process that was used to, that's another lecture, conversion process for taking a duo art role and converting it to MIDI data. But, you know, I mean, it's all numbers, that's all it is.
Bits is bits.
Oh, I'm kidding. I'm going to have to clear this one out of my computer. This will take a little while. Oh, good, this one's out. I think it should be on this other one.
Thank you.
This is her editor at this point was Frank Milne, and he was one of the great duo art editors. So now, I'm trying to think what's the best thing to do. I passed out the King of the Zulus, but I'd rather do this. I'd like you to hear one of these great piano rolls of the high duo art pop style of Ruby Bloom playing his own Spring Fever. Because I wanted you to hear that next to his acoustic recording of the same work. So you'll see how the piano roll began with his hand playing, but is another kind of version of this piece. So let's just listen to the piano roll version. Or maybe thank you. what time it is, isn't it?
We've got about 15 minutes.
15 more minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay. All right. All right. What I wanted to do was just to... It's so obvious. I don't have to say anything. This is just demonstrative. Hearing those person live and the piano roll, what the piano roll has that the live performance doesn't have, and conversely, what the live performance has that the player, the roll doesn't have. One of the interesting things that we can do now, of course, that we can convert piano rolls to MIDI data, is we can score the piano rolls. We can make actual scores from them. Not only is that good for creating more repertoire for all of us, but it's also an exercise in understanding what the artist was up to, if you're a reading musician, in a way that you can depict it to another person, what they were thinking. It's just a tool. That's really it. When you come to something like Spring Fever, which has those note elongations and basically an orchestral texture at times with choruses of different instruments, or you know, at least seemingly so. What I did was the Gershwin piano rolls that I arranged, which, by the way, I did bring some copies. I'm going to sell them, maybe, if people are interested. I ended up having to arrange rolls of Gershwin that were similar to the Ruby Bloom for two pianos. And in that way, I was able to not only get all the notes, which you could get on one piano, but with two pianos, I could interchange the interesting information between the two players. So when the theme came the first time around, piano one had it, but then the second time around, piano two had it, so it's a much more enjoyable experience to play it. And so those were arranged for two pianos. But the piece that I passed out is actually came from one person's hand playing. And this was a composition that I ran across when we were working on the Morton Project. We were contemplating putting on more than just Jelly Roll Morton's rolls, because there were only 12 of his rolls that we were able to unearth. And it was a short CD, so I went and got contemporaries of Morton, hypothetically, to put on the CD, and we ended up not doing that. And I didn't finish the editing on them. But this marvelous piece called King of the Zulu Blues is just a marvelous piece, which I liked so much I scored for my own performance. And I thought you'd be interested to see how the score looks as compared to what the piano roll sounds like. It's Richard M. Jones, and it's a QRS piano. He's a black jazzer from New Orleans, and he made a lot of recordings, and he was there. But this particular piece is, I think, one of his greatest, if not his greatest, and it's a weird. with the subject.
And they are.
You know, I'm asking you because I think that's an artifact of our time.
But wait, beyond that, there are a number of popular musicians who learn how to play from piano rolls. Yeah. And his performance creates psychologically in their mind the perception that this was possible, and then therefore they wind up developing techniques that were hitherto unknown.
Oh, sure. I think that that's, of course, they did, and, come to my concert tonight. You know, I'm going to be playing some of Gershwin's performances taken off of his disc, and I'm also going to play a piece that I transcribed from a piano roll. What player pianos could do had enormous impact on performance styles and open up new vistas. Totally. Think of Zez Confi. I mean, he's the most obvious example. But Gershwin, they all were influenced by what piano rolls could do. So it was a sort of, there was a synergy between the two, between human performance and what machines could do. And in fact, to sound like a machine may have even been desirable at one point. Yes.
Connection. It's just, I'm a musician, not an engineer, but in the case of Richard Blum, his performance had a more mechanical than the
machine.
Yeah.
Well, I think but I think also, don't forget, though, that the ambient sound of an acoustic recording, listen, don't forget what acoustic recordings will do to a person's performance. It makes it drier, more compact. It makes it more mechanical sounding. So I think we can't necessarily draw that conclusion. Also, when you hear somebody like Gershwin playing in the electrical era, it's much warmer, it's much more full. And also these people, like somebody like Banta or Blum himself, that's a late acoustic recording. You know, he'll sound different on electric recording. So careful of that.
Yeah, I mentioned more of the tribute to the guy who did the role.
It's a very complex issue.
Yes.
We all know that. I don't want to draw any conclusions. But yeah, you're thinking along some very interesting lines. Yeah. There's just so many. Yeah. Sorry. I know you want that. But yeah, sorry. You're next. Yeah.
I just wanted to point out that from the beginning, for his Broadway shows, George Gershwin insisted on having two pianos in the pit.
Yeah, sure.
And that was obviously because he liked the embellishments that were created on the piano roll.
Yeah,
that's
right.
And this is probably the same question, and maybe you can give an answer now. is there any indication that the expressive dry piano of say Morton and Waller was really influenced by the piano roll, or was it the other way around, the development, or really was there a move into really expressive playing that kind of gave an engineer a say?
I don't think that Morton was influenced by player piano. I think you have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. I think that there was, well, Confrey is the one. Confrey is absolutely a chrysalis. I'm sure Confrey got ideas from his experience as a piano roll artist. I don't want to say it's...
James P. Johnson.
I don't know enough about James P. But I know enough about Confrey. Boy, do I ever. And Confrey influenced everybody. So, okay. Help. Who is it?
One of the things that I've noticed about some of the different records that have come out of the Rhapsody and Blum piano rolls, sometimes some of the notes are skipped. That the piano action of what they played was not able to get the fast action. I was wondering, one of the things we also saw last year at the in Nashville at the hotel lobby was that this clavier, when you turn the level down, it misses the quieter notes.
That's a problem that's with us, has been with us from the beginning, and will continue to be with us, which is what I mentioned. Every piano is different. And you edit, like for instance, King of the Zulus, I edited that for a grand piano. I came in here, and, well, for one thing, at my house, I have an upright like this. I edited it originally for a 9-foot disc clavier. I had to boost the low velocity, anything that was under velocity 50, to kick it up over 50, because there's lost motion in upright you have to compensate for. Then I'm here, And we realized that this piano could take, in this hall, I boosted the velocities 107%. And this sounded the best, right? Because I designed it for this hall, for this piano. That's the name of the game, and it will always be with us. Yeah.
So just how late did your function that role in a Misty 32?
Yeah. I've forgotten. It went into the 30s. Milne was around. I mean, he was around, and then he went into QRS, and there was sort of the vestigial parts of the player piano business remained for a while. Into the 40s, I think.
How late is this rule of orchestral approach to take it? How late is that?
Oh, well, you see, the player piano and the reproducing piano just fell precipitously right after the Depression. In fact, it was already falling before the Depression, but that just crunked it. So it was only for people who already had stuff that wanted more stuff. You know, most people just got the mechanisms out of their pianos and kept them as straight pianos. I mean, you know. Yes. Any more? One. Stop, hold. I couldn't miss this step here. That somebody read the piano roll. They took the piano roll, ran it across a tracker bar that was connected to little electrodes, were wired into a computer, and they caught the data. You would see this from my computer screen. They caught it inside the computer, and you can look at information in the computer that looks just like a piano roll. It rolls right across your screen. So it's just information, because it's all it is little holes, so, you know. One more. Oh, right. Well, there are some people that are recording for player piano, but nobody's doing what he's done. But people are using synthesizers, electronic instruments of all types, doing that type of thing. But I'm being very hard-nosed, and I'm sorry to seem rude, but you don't know what I've been through. So with regard to this whole issue of fidelity, of authenticity, don't you know that when you go back in time, I'm going to be playing tonight some pieces by a living composer. I'm not playing like him at all, but I'm authentic because I'm in the period. See this from my computer screen. They caught it inside the computer. And you can look at information in the computer that looks just like a piano roll. It rolls right across your screen. So it's just information, because it's all it is little holes. So, you know. One more. Oh, sorry. Well, there are some people that are recording for player piano, but nobody's doing what he's done. But people are using synthesizers, electronic instruments of all types, doing that type of thing. But I'm being very hard-nosed, and I'm sorry to seem rude, but you don't know what I've been through. So with regard to this whole issue of fidelity, of authenticity, don't you know that when you go back in time, I'm going to be playing tonight some pieces by a living composer. I'm not playing like him at all, but I'm authentic because I'm in the period. But I may be deadly wrong in the way I'm playing the music. What is right in music? Is there one right way? This is our ears trying to say, oh, there's one right way to do this. There is not. There are many ways. And there are many ways to create music. This moralism with regard to piano rolls is an astonishing phenomenon. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's why I'm saying that. You know, you can't find the perfect one right way. It's just not possible. All right, one more. Okay, I better split.